Let's continue the story of Jacob and his family leaving Haran and heading for the Promised Land. We're in Genesis chapter 31, and we're going to start at verse 26 in a moment. Remember that Jacob has been in Aram, Padan Aram, the area around Haran, for about 20 years. First 7 years, he worked to pay a dowry for the wife that he loved. Then for the next 7 years, he paid a second dowry because he'd been tricked into marrying a sister of that beloved wife. During that second seven-year period, we have 11 boys and one girl born to four different women in Jacob's life. And then Jacob is told by God it's time, he believes it's time to leave and head home, but Laban convinces him to stay for another 6 years. And so he does, on the understanding that he gets paid in animals for all the work that he does. And these animals are going to be off-colored animals that are born each breeding season. Striped, spotted, speckled, all of that. And God is with Jacob through that whole thing. And so by the end of that six-year period, or by the end of Jacob's 20th year, he has become exceptionally wealthy. So wealthy that his father-in-law and his brothers-in-law are mad because they feel that that wealth has been stolen from them. So Jacob, at God's prompting, leaves for the Promised Land. And he leaves in a surreptitious manner, a covert manner. He waits until Laban and his sons are busy shearing their sheep somewhere else. And Jacob gets everybody loaded up on camels and gets all of his tents all packed up and his servants pushing the animals, and they head south. And Laban doesn't find out that they've left until about the third day. At the end of 10 days of travel, so sometime on the 11th day, probably toward the end of that day, Laban completely catches up with Jacob. And they're all camped together in the hill country of what will eventually be called Gilead, to the southeast of the Sea of Galilee. And God, the night before, had warned Laban that he'd better keep his mouth under control. And so we are about to read what was said in this meeting between Laban and Jacob most of the way home to the Promised Land from Haran. So Genesis 31, 26, Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have tricked me and driven away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and trick me and didn't tell me so that I might have sent you away with mirth and songs, with tambourines and lyre? Why didn't you permit me to kiss my sons or my grandsons and my granddaughters farewell?" Now that's interesting that we have a plural for the female side of things here. We only have one daughter of Jacob that is specified, by name. That's Dinah. And the reason, no doubt, that she is named is because she comes into a big story coming up. But it's possible, even likely now, reading this, that there have been other babies born that were females. And their names are just not recorded. And so Grandpa Laban is complaining, saying, "Why did you run away like you were a thief in the night? Like you were some sort of conqueror kidnapping people? Why didn't you let me have a farewell feast, a big party to say goodbye, where I could you know, cuddle with my grandkids and kiss them and love on them. Now you have done foolishly. It was not right. And in some respects, Laban is correct. God did tell Jacob to leave, but he didn't tell him to leave covertly. That was Jacob's choice. So he might have been able to leave on much better terms. But as is often the case when we're hearing real stories, people sometimes panic and take actions that are not necessarily what God intended them to do. Remember, God had already told Jacob, you don't have to be afraid. You can head home. I'm going to be with you. I'm going to fulfill all my promises. So why would Jacob be afraid that Laban would kill him and take everything back, which is what he'll say in a moment? He shouldn't have been. He should have trusted God completely. But back to Laban's comments. It's in my power to do you harm. So it's in my right to act against you because you cheated me of family rights. But the God of your father, now that's interesting. He's not claiming the God of Abraham and Nahor and Terah, their father, and Yitzhak and Bethuel as his God. He says he's the God of your father. And we already know that he was prone to be tapping into the spirit world in a way that he shouldn't have. So he does not seem to be fully on board with the one true faith like his sister was and is. But anyway, the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful not to say anything to Jacob, either good or bad. So I could do something. I would have every right to do something against you, but I'm not going to, because I was warned supernaturally that you're under his protection. Verse 3, and now you have gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? So why did you steal my teraphim? Or my Elohim, the things that I worship and communicate with. And you remember how that happened. That was Rachel. And my suggestion is that she was doing it to try to keep Laban from communicating into the spirit world like he habitually did. So Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid. Did you hear that? That's his confession. I was afraid, for I thought that you would take your daughters from me by force. I thought you would kill me or severely harm me and take everything back. But then he responds to the last thing. Anyone with whom you find your gods shall not live. Now that is an amazing thing for him to say. I'm going to speculate here. I'm going to speculate that he believes it's probably one of his servants that did this. He would never in a million years have said those words if he suspected somebody beloved by him had done it. So anyone you find your gods with shall not live. We'll execute them. That's not appropriate theft. I mean, this is a culture different than one we live in. And so this idea of stealing religious icons, even of another faith, that was a great violation of their personal rights. And it was very often punishable by death. So anyone with whom you find your God shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, You point out what I have taken that is yours, and then you take it. Now, Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. Now, imagine Rachel hearing what Jacob just said. Gulp. You know, suddenly it's like, oh, dear. I got to come up with a plan because I've got them. They're in my camel saddlebag. So Laban went into Jacob's tent. So this, again, is something out of our custom understanding. Jacob has his own tent, and that's where he sleeps. Leah has her own tent. That's where she sleeps. Then Rachel has her tent. The two female servants have their own tents. So that's their personal places. Jacob, I hope I'm not being too insensitive here, when Jacob has to perform conjugal rites to Leah, he goes to her tent. When he has to perform conjugal rites for Rachel, he goes to Rachel's tent. And then when the surrogate thing was going on, he had to go to the surrogate woman's tent. So that's the way it's been working for 13 years now. So Laban went first into Jacob's tent, looking for his little gods, his little clay figurines. Didn't find them. Then into Leah's tent, nothing. Into the tent of the two female servants. Sounds like maybe they bunked together. And he didn't find them. He went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's. Now that's where they are. Now Rachel had taken these household gods and put them in the camel's saddle and sat on them. Again, these are not big items. They are small. Think of like an action figure, some sort of collectible. That's how small they are. And so she has stuffed them into her personal camel saddlebag. And when they make tent, when they camp each night and her tent is put up by the servants, they take her camel saddle and put it in there, and it kind of becomes a furniture. It becomes a place to sit. So she sits on top of her saddle while Dad's coming in, and Laban felt all about the tent and did not find them. So you can kind of see it in your mind, can't you? He's going around this little tent, and he's checking everything. Maybe he's pulling up the little rugs that are laying on the ground and looking underneath everything. And he can't find them. Then she said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry," that is, "Sir, don't be angry, that I cannot rise before you," that is, "I can't stand up in respect to you as my father, for the way of women is upon me." So she basically says, "I'm sorry I can't get up right now to properly greet you because I'm having my period." Now, in this time, when a woman was having her period, they would use cloth in order to catch the flow. And the custom understanding was that because this flow was blood, that blood was to be highly respected, and one of the ways that this was expressed was if you touched the blood, then you had to withdraw from contact with other people for a period of time until your contact with the blood had kind of worn off. Now, it's unfortunate the wording that gets used with this. It's idiomatic, talking about unclean. When we hear unclean, we think unhygienic. And that's not really the intention of the word. It's the idea of off limits. And we can see that in the Jewish Mosaic code that will be coming up later, that a woman who was having her period, once she stopped with the last bit of flow, she'd count like a week, and then she'd be able to re-enter regular relationships because then she was no longer, quote, off limits because she no longer had contact with blood. So even before the Mosaic Code, it was customarily understood that if you touched a woman who was having her period or touched anything that she was sitting on, laying on, you would also become, quote, unclean or off limits for a period of time. So the moment she said those words, and we have no reality, no base, we have no ability to know whether or not she's telling the truth. I suspect she is probably spinning a tale. The moment she said that, it guaranteed he was not going to check her saddlebags. No way in the world was he going to do it. So that was the way she kept from being discovered. So he searched but did not find the household gods. So he's looked through everything, including the servants' places. No household gods. And that's when Jacob loses his cool. Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, "What's my offense? What's my sin that you've hotly pursued me? You felt through all my goods." Because that's what he'd done. He'd been checking every little nook and cranny in the entire little tent city. "You felt through all my goods. What have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two." So, where's your evidence? Where's those teraphim? Come on, produce it. And then he goes on his little rant that he's probably been holding in, kind of stuffing it down for a while. "These 20 years I've been with you, your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I've not eaten the rams of your flocks." So basically, I have made sure through my ministration of your flocks that everything was good with them. Your female animals produced without losing pregnancies. And I haven't been eating any of your rams. A little bit more. "What was torn by wild beasts, I didn't bring that to you. I bore the loss of it myself. From my hand you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night." Apparently that was part of the deal, is that any animal loss under Jacob's care had to be paid back to Laban by Jacob. "There I was by day. The heat consumed me." It gets hot. It gets hot out there in the middle of the day taking care of these sheep. "And the cold by night." Wow, it gets cold in the middle of the night, especially in the wintertime. "And my sleep fled from my eyes," because he has to make sure the animals are safe even through the middle of the night. And before he started hiring servants, he was the one that had to take care of that. "These 20 years I've been within your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, 6 years for your flock. You've changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac," that fear there stands in for the word God, because God is to be feared. He is to be reverenced. He is to be awed. "The fear of God," or the fear, "the God of Abraham, the fear of Isaac, if he had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed." So he thinks that his father-in-law would have cheated him out of everything. And then he makes this confession. "God, the God, El Shaddai, El Elyon, Yahweh, He who is. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands, and He rebuked you last night. So He told you off. Then Laban answered, and so now he's ticked, and you know how things escalate. They're going at it. There's some raised voices, no doubt, happening here. Laban answered and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters. The children are my children. The flocks are my flocks." And I can see him jamming his finger around, pointing at everything, saying, "These are all mine, all mine. All that you see is mine." I can see him waving those hands all around to take in the whole area. Because remember, they're in a little mini tent city of Jacob's, surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of animals. "All that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have borne? So there's nothing I can do about it. Makes me mad, but I can't do a thing. So come now, let us make a covenant. Let's enter into an agreement, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me, a mitzvah, if you will, that we're going to see mentioned later. It's not actually the word mitzvah here, but an oath. It'll be a mitzvah in a bit, about a watchtower. So Jacob took a stone and he set it up as a pillar. Now again, I said this whenever we saw the Bethel story. A pillar is not necessarily a big, tall, skinny, standing thing. It's a monument. So Jacob takes some sort of prominent stone that's right there, and he establishes it as a monument. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, "You gather stones." So they took stones, and so they made a heap. So they bring a whole bunch of stones together into what we would call a cairn, a stone pile. They've made a marker. And then they ate there by the heap. One of the ways that you seal a deal is with a meal. When you eat together, you are in agreement. And so Laban, who is from Aram, and whose dialect is Aramaic, he called it Yager Sahaduta, which literally means heap of witness or witness heap. Jacob, who speaks a dialect we're calling Hebrew, which is related to Aramaic, but it's not exactly the same. He called it Galid, which means exactly the same thing, witness heap. Now, Galid eventually morphs into Gilead. And so this witness pile of rocks is where the region gets its name from. Verse 48, Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." Therefore, he called it Galid. That's Jacob that's calling it Galid. Laban's calling it Yager Sahaduta. But Jacob gives it a secondary name. Listen to this. Laban gives it a secondary name. And Mitzpah. Mitzpah means watchtower or watchpost. It would be like a raised up platform so that you've got a better view of the region around you. Shepherds would make these so that they could keep a good eye on their sheep without having any obstacles in the way between them and the sheep. So they're treating this like a little watchpost. And he said, "May he who is," or remember, that's Moses inserting the divine name here, El Shaddai, El Elyon, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, "may he watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. Now, that's interesting. This is basically, I don't trust you. I expect God to keep an eye on you whenever we're not around. Now, it's interesting. We got these mitzvah coin pendants that couples share. My wife and I, when we were in high school together, we had a set of these. And it was so lovey-dovey, right? May God keep an eye on both of us when we're separate from one another. Well, that's not what the intention of the original text was. It's, I don't trust you, and when I can't keep an eye on you, I expect God to keep an eye on you and make you keep this deal. Verse 50, if you oppress my daughters, you know, treat them badly, if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. So Laban says, behave yourself down in Canaan, and God will get you if you don't do the right thing. So Laban said to Jacob, see this heap and pillar which I've set between you and me? This heap is a witness. The pillar is a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm. So this becomes a marker boundary. Laban says, you stay south of this boundary, I'll stay north of this boundary, unless, of course, prior arrangement is made. And you behave yourself, and I'll behave myself. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, that'd be Terah, judge between us. So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac, and Jacob offered a sacrifice in the hill country and called his kinsmen to eat bread. And they ate bread and spent the night in the hill country. And so that is the mitzvah accord, which keeps both sides on the up and up as they separate from each other.